Please be seated.
Oh, Miss Williams, with you. With you.
Yep. I've spoken with my friends about timing and just how we're tracking today, and it's looking highly unlikely that we'll get to Mr. De Pelsmaker, and that doesn't cause any of my friends any issues. So unless the court's desperately keen to hear from him tonight, he's best perhaps left for the afternoon tomorrow.
Afternoon tomorrow, so keep, but we will finish with the doc witness.
We'll finish
tonight
with Doc and, and Dr. Dunn,
Yep, no, that's fine. Now, one of the things that, you know, because I lose control just as soon as I ask questions about planning time, you know, planning conferences, dates and blah, 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 then nobody comes back to me. So what was the outcome in terms of planners meeting and the April dates? I think you had 7th, 8th and 9th, and the answer was, are they all available?
I'm in the process of confirming that, Your Honour, and making sure that we're capturing all parties with planning witnesses for that.
You see, I've got to get a minute out. You know, I just do, because there are more people in the room than just us.
Yes.
Yeah. So when are we going to have that nailed?
So I have someone working on that in the office at the moment, Your Honour, in terms of liaising with parties, and I can follow that up. And the view is trying to get that nailed down today, depending on availability of those who need to be contacted.
Or we'll just make a date. So if I don't hear by 5 o'clock, if I don't hear by 5, we'll just make a date and we'll just nominate dates and people can just stuck with it. Also, what's happening with that schedule, that is the agreed data set and scenarios?
Yes, the experts have been working on that today, and I understand that the experts for LANPRO and ORUG are considering the response that's been provided by the Otago Regional Council witnesses, and they've advised that they'll be reviewing that overnight and coming back to the Regional Council about that tomorrow morning, so that ORUG and LANPRO have an opportunity to discuss that together. So that's
so
the
again,
latest
in terms of the release of the court's minute, directing conferencing. So it shouldn't go out tonight, it should go out sometime tomorrow. You can see the difficulty. Every time we ask a question, there's no response because people are conferring. And I'm sorry to put pressure on you, but there is pressure all the way through this hearing now.
And I understand that, Your Honour, and I do apologise. I hadn't appreciated, in terms of the scenarios, that you needed those
by Friday, because that's what I directed. And ideally, I'd be releasing minutes, but like you, we're also involved in a hearing, and so now I'm multitasking across various things.
Yes, I acknowledge that, Your Honour.
So what? So don't release a minute until 9:30 tomorrow, because we'll have an agreed scenario.
Depending on the views of the experts who are reviewing the material that they have at the moment, I can't speak for them as to whether they will have an agreed position by that time tomorrow. We can certainly advise them that they do need to reach an agreed position by that time tomorrow for the court to issue a minute.
Then that will, what then?
In my view, the conferencing can still, there can still be directions as to the conferencing with a follow-up.
I tell you what, I won't do, well, I'll do something, but it's more likely to get Ross Dunlop in the room and start talking to the any witness who can't agree on the matter directly, rather than taking up your time, my time, on this matter. You know, because the worst result will be that the witnesses can't agree on any sensible case, you know, data set nor scenarios, but they are all of them positioning or jockeying for positions.
Yes, sorry, Your Honour. My understanding is they are, the experts are working constructively together, and it's just a matter of ensuring that they are working with the right scenarios and that they are representative, and how they approach that in terms of the three different methods and how they are practically run in terms of doing that prior to the conferencing. So they are working together constructively. That's what I've seen from correspondence today.
Since we have you both in the House, also, we are going to have something from at least ORUG by a response by 8:30, so it can be fed to Council by 9, so Ms. Mahop can update the court.
Yeah, I just
probably mirror what Ms. Malcock was saying, that the experts are conferring directly. And as I understand it, they're just resolving some differences on a couple of extra scenarios that help demonstrate the complexity of some of the types of issues that we contend with. So I'm not expecting that to take a long time. It's just they've been emailing and talking to each other today. So they are progressing.
So the question was, will they be finished overnight such that you can communicate to Ms. Malhop that there is agreement, LANPRO, ORUG, and ORC, and possibly WISE, if they're in the room also for this, as to those scenarios?
I believe that's the last correspondence I've got in my inbox, is that we'll get a report back overnight.
And you'll communicate that to Ms. Malhop by 8:30 so she can do something, update us by 9. All right. And you better have all counsel to have a clear idea as to what is to happen next if there's no agreement. My suggestion is we'll just simply let Mr. Dunlop deal with that.
And, Your Honour, in terms of WISE response, I can confirm that they have confirmed Mr. McTavish's attendance at that conferencing.
Which one?
At the primary sector.
Primary sector, that's where he's interested. I thought he would be. Yep, okay. All right, well, I'll hold off issuing any minute until we hear from you at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Yes, thank you. Right. Back to you, Ms. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honour. So I'm starting again at paragraph 18 on page 6. So current deemed permits may have priorities whereby the permit holders holding the permits, where they were granted earlier in time, can require upstream permit holders whose permits were originally granted later in time to cease taking their full allocation to ensure sufficient water passes downstream to the higher priority take point. And there was some discussion in the evidence about wet years and dry years, and really these are important in dry flow conditions. They are similar in my submission to a residual flow condition on a resource consent. The effect of a higher priority applying in a catchment is that lower priority takes upstream must ensure that sufficient flow passes them by to meet the requirements of the downstream and higher priority take. So of course, with a residual flow, that's because there is a need to preserve the in-stream values downstream of the take. This is actually about allowing sufficient water to continue past to a downstream lower priority take. Sorry, and higher priority take.
I do understand that.
Yes.
What I don't understand is how that then gets implemented. ORC says, well, it just gets picked up.
Yes.
Hopefully it'll get picked up in the actual record if people have been exercising those rights. But their rights, as I understand it, as between consent holders.
So I'm coming on to address that, Your Honour. But I just wanted to make the point that whilst they're perhaps for a different purpose, because they are in many respects similar to a residual take, they do preserve the habitat downstream from the lower priority take.
And well, maybe. Where's the evidence there being exercised?
And that, Your Honour, as I say, is not something that I have particular evidence of, and it might be something that you need to explore, but certainly that is
I'm not entering the arena. So I need to, you know, you needed to have evidence about are they being exercised? And so you need to be in the arena asking the questions.
Yes. We might have to come back to that, Your Honour. Moving on to paragraph 20, another way of looking at the use of priorities is as a condition requiring cessation of take, either in part or in full. And again, this is to ensure that sufficient flow carries on past a lower priority take to meet those requirements of the higher priority take downstream. So the RMA, Your Honour, under its transitional provisions, extended mining privileges under sections 413 to 417 for 30-year period. And in particular, section 413, subsection 2, continued the application of relevant sections of the Water and Soil Amendment Act 1971, and I set that out there at paragraph 21. So carrying on at 22, Your Honour, it is sections 11, which is retention of right of priority, 13, exercise of priority, and 14, obligations of holders of current mining privileges of the Water and Soil Conservation Amendment Act, which apply under section 413 as conditions of deemed permits and which have the effect of maintaining existing priorities. And I have attached those provisions, Your Honour, in Appendix A of my submissions, which is on page 14.
Sorry, can you just pause for a second?
In response to the Minister's recommendations, the Council listed key principles to inform the development of what has now become Plan Change 7. And those principles included, at item C, consideration of potential impacts on existing water abstractors and existing priorities and deemed permits. So that is a matter which is part of the mandate for the Plan Change, Your Honour.
Okay, just pause there a second. The point of consideration being the potential impact on existing water extractors, yes, and consideration of the existing priorities.
Yes.
That consideration doesn't direct an outcome, though, did it?
It doesn't direct an outcome, Your Honour, but it certainly directs that that is a matter to be considered as part of the plan change.
What does that mean? That you had to include it in the plan change, or is it a matter to be considered by the Regional Council when drafting its plan change?
In my submission, Your Honour, it was a matter that the Council mandate for drafting the plan change requires consideration of existing priorities. It is a matter which needed to be somehow accounted for within the plan change.
Why do you say that? Minister could not. It's, at that point in time, was the Minister directing that they had to be accounting for the priorities, or that consideration was to be given to whether there should be accounting for the priorities?
This is the Council response to the Minister's recommendation, Your Honour. So this is Council coming
Council
back.
Council saying it,
yes.
Right, OK. You need to take the submissions just a little bit more slowly.
Apologies, yeah. Your Honour.
So the Council's coming back and saying, well, we've got to give consideration to existing priorities.
Yes, Your Honour.
Does that mean to say, therefore, an outcome in the plan change?
I think that this is where I'm getting to, Your
yeah.
Honour, is that, yes, in my view, they did need to actually account for that. And this is where, and I can't quite where I get to this, but the priorities, if they are being exercised, do have hydrology impacts. We're very clear on that. They are maintaining potentially habitat, and following the precautionary principle, Your Honour, there is a need to continue those to avoid exacerbating the current environmental situation. This is the way I understand what Council are trying to do, as in the Regional Council. They're wanting to maintain the status quo. They're wanting to hold the line. If we allow priorities to expire, there are potentially adverse impacts which will not hold the line and which will exacerbate adverse effects on the environment.
So your response to ORC's case as it presently stands, which is that it already has considered and accounted for the priorities by wishing to impose conditions limiting takes to actual usage, which should include the trace of
yes.
the priorities, is inadequate because of what?
It's inadequate, Your Honour, because it doesn't account for when the water is taken. You know, because
just pause there a second. So. So, because it doesn't account for when the water is taken.
When it could be taken.
Yes. And whether it
was taken, yes. As a matter of fact.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Commissioner.
And when it could be taken coinciding with a dry period. Is that what the issue is?
Yes, Your Honour. And whether it should be taken, and this issue is that, and that's why I've compared it with the analogy of a residual flow or a take cessation condition, because those are existing tools which council uses on its resource consents, and I'm really not understanding why there is a difficulty in priorities which are very similar to those being carried forward.
Absence of evidence as to their exercise?
And I come to that next, Your Honour.
Okay.
So, Your Honour, at paragraph 24, I am a little perplexed by Mr. de Pelsemaker's evidence that Council has a lack of understanding about priorities and the degree to which they are being exercised. As section 413 subsection 2 states, where priority conditions applied on deemed permits immediately prior to the RMA coming into force on 1 October 1991, those provisions were continued and included as conditions of deemed permits. Section 14(1) paragraph H of the Water and Soil Conservation Amendment Act provides a power for Council as the consent authority to obtain information from permit holders about the exercise of priorities. And I've set that provision out there, Your Honour.
Did they?
That, I guess, is my point, Your Honour. It's certainly within Council's power to require that information. I'm not sure it's for the Director General to tell Council what it needs to do, but in my submission it should have considered this, and it certainly has the power to require that information.
So in terms of your relief, can you just remind me how that point is picked up in terms of any relief?
The relief, Your Honour, talks about banding, and to be honest, and again I'm going to say this further down as well, we're abandoning the banding suggestion because it's a bad suggestion. It was something that was, it was an idea that was come up with, but it would require a lot of work. It would require council actually to spend a lot of time with permit holders, deemed permit holders, and the Director General and its own records to sort of do that work. And maybe we might have been able to do that if we were in June 2020. We're now in March 2021. We don't have the time. So this is why I'm moving to an alternative relief, Your Honour, which is actually...
Okay.
Yes.
Good. All right.
So, and this is where I'm getting to, Your Honour. So there is a very helpful memorandum of the 1st of March 2021, which the Council has filed in court, and that it was in response to the court's direction seeking examples of deemed permits. And there we have, Your Honour, in annexures D and E, examples of permits which have existing priorities. And so I have set out there in the balance of paragraphs 26, Your Honour, the relevant or relevant portions of the permit stating how the priority applies.
Yeah. So we know that as a matter of record, or at least we hope as a matter of record, that you'd be able to look up every deemed permit and hopefully find these provisions in them. But does that...
consents, those deemed permits that might be referred to still exist,
because there
may have been a process that's overtaken all this that means that they're no longer live.
But in theory, for those that are continuing to exist, we know there is a record as to what those priorities are. But in practice, this is a thing that you need to explore with witnesses to come. Are they actually exercised that way? So if I'm an irrigation company with priority, and there are other large entities like irrigation companies on the same body, it may well be that in furtherance of that condition, it's been interpreted in a particular way as between irrigation companies, which may not actually look like... It may be effective in terms of what this condition is, but may be quite complex in terms of those private arrangements as between permit holders, particularly large permit holders, yes, on any one water body, is how I imagine it could well go.
Yes, yes.
So is that not picked up, that notion perhaps, in Mr. De Palsmaker's evidence, where he starts to talk about, what has he got? This may or may not be what he had in mind. Well, it may or may not be what he had in mind at, say, attachment one of his evidence, dealing in this case with the controlled activity rule at the top of page 5. And he's talking about existing consent conditions, maybe existing consent conditions concerning operating procedures administered through relevant water allocation committees. That may be it. But you'd have, and I guess the proposition that I'm putting to you is there a possibility that there are private arrangements as between individuals holding deemed permits on these water catchments, which, while giving effect, give effect to those priorities in, yes, a way which is not visible to this council?
I can't answer, obviously, in respect of private arrangements, Your Honour. Water allocation committees, there is a specific provision in the operative plan for the establishment for that. That's something that they then are a body which is visible to the council, and I guess that would be why that provision has then gone through into the proposed matters of control that Mr. De Palsmaker has suggested for that controlled activity. Some of the... Because priorities operate within a catchment, there is certainly the various catchment groups which have been setting themselves up, and it may be that they are able to assist the council where priorities matter and with taking that forward. And I guess, again, Your Honour, my point here is that these are existing conditions in existing permits, and so they are visible. Whilst the degree to which they are exercised may be less visible, there is no difficulty in taking those conditions forward into replacement permits.
What are your underlying assumptions?
So partly my assumptions, Your Honour, are that that they are being exercised and that they are affecting the hydrology of what otherwise would be in water bodies and thereby freshwater ecosystems. And so that if they are not continued, that there is a risk in terms of the environment that we will, because in some respects, we used to talk about, obviously these came about originally because of a gold rush in Otago. What we now have is a bit of a water rush in Otago. There is a certain balance, if I put it that way, which is maintained by the existing priorities where they're being exercised. And to take away that factor, in my submission, has the potential to lead to and aggravate by leaving to another potential water rush where people upstream who have lower priority suddenly go, I can take whenever I like.
The second assumption is that the priorities will be exercised in a way which is advantageous for threatened species. And that may not always be the case, particularly where those priorities are private arrangements between, yes, individuals for other purposes.
And look, I think that's a risk, unfortunately, Your Honour, that we have to run. And that's, in my view, again, what the longer-term planning processes, which are going to actually assess the vision for catchments, the objectives and the values, that's actually part of that longer-term process going forwards. Because to try and identify where they are detrimental. If they're detrimental, they're already detrimental. It's making sure that we don't change and have an unintended adverse environmental effect.
And your proposed relief is what, in terms of capturing and having... capturing the hydrological conditions with no change to the hydrological conditions is what?
So my proposed relief, Your Honour, is actually that the existing, and that was why I thought it was useful that we had these examples attached to the memorandum, would be to actually repeat those conditions as taken cessation conditions in replacement permits for controlled activities.
As taken cessation conditions.
Or residual flow. Because they amount to the same thing, a different purpose, but they do amount to the same thing.
And your witness is giving evidence that they amount to the same thing?
I have to say, Your Honour, because my witness has written his evidence in relation to the notified plan change and the Director General's submission. No, he has not discussed this, but that's something which he can discuss in supplementary evidence once he's had the opportunity to consider the supplementary evidence of Mr. De Pelsemaker.
Your witness being... which witness are we referring to here? Because I would have...
Mr. Brass.
Mr.
Brass.
He's not your hydrologist, though, is he?
No,
Your
Honour.
Hydrologist is going to have to talk to this.
I don't have a hydrology business, Your Honour.
Oh, sorry, I thought you did. Well, you've just got a fish person.
Yes.
Fish expert.
Although he does have some hydrology expertise. He's not a qualified hydrologist.
All right. And if this takes a 35-year consent to get you to where you want to be, then what?
I have to say, Your Honour, that... I do consider a 35-year consent would be too long. A 35-year consent, you know, I am here speaking for the little fish, but that is not the only important thing in the in concept in Te Mana o Te Wai. There are a lot of other matters as well. Mm-hmm. I am speaking for the little fish and the continuation of this for a six-year period as part of a controlled activity. My submission would be that the further processes then allow for consideration of not just the little fish but all those other really important values that need to be accounted for in an MPS compliant planning framework.
Well, fortuitously, Ms. Dicey also wants priorities, and so we can explore with Ms. Dicey what did she mean, and does she also see it the same way?
Yes.
That it's a residual flow or taken cease. Or secession condition.
Yep.
Does she see it the same way? Yeah.
Yes, I am down to cross-examine Ms. Dicey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to fish passage, Your Honour, para 28. So there are three matters which we've already talked about today in the Section 3 implementation of the National Policy Statement, which are required to be included in regional plans without following a Schedule 1 process, and that includes Clause 326(1), which is the fish passage clause, and I've set that out there. Mm-hmm. And I've noted at 29... Sorry, Your Honour.
Mm-hmm.
I've noted at 29 that this potentially does pose a difficulty for Plan Change 7, which intends to insert a standalone chapter into the regional plan. And in my submission, this could be overcome by assuming that just as the discharge permitted activity rules in Chapter 12 will apply to controlled activities, in this chapter. The NPS policies must be relevant and provide policy support to methods of control on activities required by Plan Change 7. I might add, Your Honour, that whilst those policies may not yet formally be within the operative plan, I was in a hearing for a resource consent in August last year, Your Honour, where the question of the application of the NPS to natural inland wetlands was a live issue, and where the Commissioner deliberately chose to close the hearing on the 4th of September so that he could have regard to Policy 322, Clause 1, in addressing that. And that was for this Council, Your Honour. So this Council certainly is prepared to act on and implement those policies, even if they are not formally within the operative plan.
So if there were no methods of control related to this matter, would you still be making the same argument? Because, after all, this is an objective, but you still need a rule hook, don't you, to apply this policy?
Well, exactly, Your Honour, Commissioner. And in my submission, that drives the need for fish passage to be a matter of control and matter of discretion.
That's what you're wanting.
I just
wanted to be clear about that in the light of the amendments that are now going to be in front of us.
I'm now move on to just talking briefly about the Freshwater Fisheries Regulations 1983. So they deal with maintenance of fish passage in Part 6. The relevance of those regulations and their purpose compared with that of the RMA was considered in declaratory proceedings before His Honour Judge Whiting in 2002. And I've set out there essentially His Honour's conclusion about the purpose of the regulations and consideration of fish passage under the RMA. At 31, the issue was live in that case because there was a challenge to the extent of Council's powers to manage fish passage as part of consent sought under Sections 13 and 14 of the Act, given the existence of the regulations. The Court made the declaration sought that fish passage is within the jurisdiction of consent authorities, finding the two statutory instruments have different purposes and are not inconsistent with each other. The Director General makes decisions under the regulations. It is only where some existing and any new structures impede fish passage that an authorisation from the Director General is required. This highlights the importance of Council's role as a consent authority to ensure fish passage is maintained, unless there is good reason, and there is, in my submission, good reason expressed in Clause 326 of the NPS, to depart from that starting point that fish passage should be maintained. It's only where there is that departure and fish passage is actually impeded that the Director General becomes involved under the regulations.
What does that mean? It's only where there is a departure?
So the departure I'm talking about is from the requirement to maintain fish passage. Your Honour, I might skip over the next three paragraphs. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Did you understand that last I'm not sure about what you're actually saying here. Director General gets involved at paragraph 32. For some existing and some new instructions which impede fish passage. If that is to be the case, then you'll need an authorisation from the Director General. So, Sorry, you've lost me. What is the issue here? I think you're saying the Director General's powers are not broad enough, as may be required, to ensure that that there is fish passage.
Essentially, Your Honour, where the Director General only can deal with existing structures.
Oh, okay.
The Director General can't deal with a structure which is proposed to be built. And that's where councils have the ability, as consenting authorities, considering structures and beds of stream beds, lake beds, etc., to manage that aspect. If you end up with a structure which does impede fish passage, that's the point when the Director General has to consider it and you know, decide whether to authorise it or whether you actually need to go back and take some remedial action.
Now, what's that to do with this plan change, though?
It isn't, Your Honour. It was simply that I did mention the issue of fish passage and the regulations the other day, and I just was covering it for completeness, Your Honour.
Okay, that's probably not helpful, in as much as the... What's the job of the court in relation to fish passage? What are you asking the court to do?
So in relation to fish passage, the job of the court, Your Honour, in my submission, is to assist the consent authority in terms of the plan change to maintain fish passage as the new policy, which is read into the plan, directs under the NPS. And this is because there is a significant resource management issue around fish passage and lack of fish passage, and so this is where, Your Honour, it's relevant.
And that is because what? That there are deemed permits and existing permits out there that have no conditions pertaining to fish passage, and they really ought.
Yes, and again, Your Honour, it's ensuring that existing conditions are maintained, so that again, it's about where the current take would allow fish passage, that continues, where the current take doesn't allow fish passage and that has, as in part, an environmental effect, protection of Galaxias habitat, that is continued.
So where it doesn't allow...
Yep.
Right, okay. So we've got a resource consent which has a condition as to fish passage, say one which is allowing fish passage, or alternatively one which is blocking fish passage, as the case may be. Those conditions get rolled over in the new consent, don't they?
They should be rolled over into the new consent.
And so if that is the case, then that's probably not the case that the Director General's addressing. The Director General's addressing some other case.
Yes.
Where there's no condition.
Yes, and so that, you're right, Your Honour, so that would be in the circumstance of the existing deemed permits. And it's simply to allow Council to impose, again, as matters of control or matters of discretion, conditions which maintain the existing fish passage situation, whatever it might be.
Maintain the existing fish passage situation, where there are... Okay. So, give me a hypothetical. Got a deemed permit, there's no condition on the permit as to do with fish passage, but what? But nevertheless...
So nevertheless, the point of take is actually effectively resulting in a dewatering of a passage of natural water body because it's all being diverted into a water race. Downstream in that water body, we have trout, which predate on non-diadromous galaxid species. Upstream, we have Clutha roundheads. Sorry.
Something.
Otago, central Otago roundhead galaxias. Yeah. I'm mixing my fish up. And they are managing to persist in that upstream habitat because the trout do not have any way of egress up there. If there is a change in the way that water is taken such that we now have a new flow going down what was previously a dewatered stretch, allowing trout and other species to come up, that's the threat to the fish.
So then... The fish passage isn't necessarily about putting in ladders or putting in blocks.
No.
It's about maintaining the current hydrological flow.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And that's all it's about?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not about putting in hard infrastructure into the river?
No, that would require obviously additional conditions, and that's not the point of this plan change. So it's actually about maintaining the existing environment.
So it might also be about not taking out barriers that there currently are.
Yes.
That mean that the salmonids can't get to the galaxias. Would that
yes.
be right?
Absolutely. So moving to the Director General's submission and relief, and I have to say, Your Honour, that I'm perhaps in a similar position to my friend Mr Page, in that the court proceedings have moved on, but I have instructions and I have not had the opportunity to really refresh those instructions, so I'm just alerting you to that. So talking to the controlled activity at 37, the Director General accepts the juicy carrot option of the controlled activity as a means to provide for the replacement of permits in the short term. He does seek additional measures of control to ensure that those replacement permits do not result in worse environmental outcomes, especially as these relate to threatened non-diatomous galaxias and their habitats. The Director General also sought and continues to seek the retention of priorities for deemed permits where these are currently being exercised as they're lapsing, sorry, that should be as, not and, could adversely impact current hydrological conditions.
So just and they're lapsing, no, that's...
Yes, so it should be as rather than
as
and.
As they're lapsing, okay.
Yes, sorry.
Can you just again slow down the pace a little bit?
Apologies, Your Honour. The specific relief, as I indicated before, which was proposed, was addition of flow triggers and banding, and I do accept that that proposed relief is cumbersome, would likely defeat the intended purpose of Plan Change 7 to provide an efficient and timely transition, and so I'm not pursuing that relief. However, I submit, as set out above, an alternative way to continue to apply priorities in replacement consents is to use cessation of take and or residual flow conditions. And where these deemed permits have been substituted under the RMA, Council has the information available for it to apply conditions.
And your witness, your planning witness, has or has not turned their mind to that?
He has now, Your Honour. I don't know, I can't actually recall whether he did in his evidence. No.
No, okay. All right. So a bit like everybody else, I think it is absolutely critical for court and only fair to all parties that if there is a change of position in the planning evidence, particularly in the relief, that it's documented.
Yes, Your Honour.
Because I must be, I must have very little imagination, but I can't imagine how you're going to get from a deemed permit condition to a cessation condition. So that's fine. That's my lack of imagination. I need to see it in, writing.
Yes, Your Honour.
Yeah. Everybody's in the same boat. So I said to Mr Page, really important that he come back at 9 a.m. What time? No, 9 a.m. on Wednesday, as to whether or not his client's changed the position, and therefore, you know, timing as to any supplementary evidence. But it's actually key for everybody who's changing their position now.
Yes, Your Honour. The only difficulty I have is that, of course, Mr Brass is due in Marlborough on Wednesday. So the evidence might be available, Your Honour, but Mr Brass won't be.
Who's Commissioner Wilkinson's facilitating that conference, isn't she?
Yes.
Well, has she been alerted to what the restrictions are or timing issues here?
I'm sorry, Your Honour, I'm not counsel on that matter, so I just don't know.
Well, she should be. So that there's an opportunity to see whether or not that conference can be rearranged to allow your witness a little bit more time to prepare.
Yes, Your Honour.
Can you convey that to counsel for the Director General?
I can certainly pass that on, Your Honour, yes. Your Honour, at 40, the Director General has also raised the question of whether existing Schedule 2A minimum flows should apply, and his relief suggests that these should apply to replacement permits under the controlled activity rule, and I'm not going to take that any further at this time, but that's certainly the relief that was sought, Your Honour.
And you're continuing with that or don't know yet?
That's something you're unaware, as I say. That's what the relief sought, and I've certainly explored that in cross-examination with both Mr. De Pelsemaker and Dr. Allibone. And the concern really is to avoid, as I say, at 43, further degradation of the environment. Mm. And it may be that those are sufficiently addressed through the schedule. I just am not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't recall whether your witness is talking about the schedule plus the allocation block as well.
We didn't seek... We only sought the minimum flows, Your Honour. Mm. We didn't seek the continuation of the allocation block, or the application, sorry, of the allocation block. I think the thinking behind seeking the minimum flows was that it was a baseline for some kind of environmental consideration based on the information that was available when they were set.
And you're not sure where you've got to this? I'm just saying that because who is it? Fish and Games hydrologist gives quite detailed evidence about how those two things work together.
Yes.
Without an allocation block, you're going to take the flows down and hold them at a flat line potentially during the drying months.
Yes. I suppose the alternative, however, Your Honour, is proposition, Your Honour, is that if there isn't a minimum flow, then they can dip below what the minimum flow might have been. So, it's something which is causing us some difficulty and which we're having to reflect upon, and I don't have an updated response as yet on that.
No answer on that yet.
No answer on that yet.
Is that right?
Sorry?
No answer on that yet, is that what you're saying?
No.
No. Mm-hmm.
Moving to para 44, as I've stated, the plan change cannot lose sight of the threatened non-diadromous Galaxias fish in their habitats. Where they persist in Otago, these fish are part of freshwater ecosystems and water bodies whose health and wellbeing must be prioritised under Te Mana o Te Wai. As accepted by Mr. De Pelsemaker, matters of control are discretionary. If they are not included, there is no ability for Council to impose conditions to manage those important matters and ensure Plan Change 7 is indeed holding the line and avoiding further degradation of the environment. And in my submission, not including matters of control for non-diadromous Galaxias will result in the Plan Change failing, even on its limited terms, to give effect to Te Mana o Te Wai. Over the page, Your Honour, I'm now dealing with the new restricted discretionary activity, which of course is not a matter on which the Director General submitted because it wasn't in the notified plan change. And I've noted that this is Mr. De Pelsemaker's response to submissions seeking a path for consent where consent holders have already made financial commitments to expand irrigation and move to more efficient use of existing allocation. And I'm really going to reserve the position of the Director General on this additional pathway. I am unclear about the extent of the problem that this solution proposes to address. While Mr. De Pelsemaker's evidence assumes that there will be an environmental gain, presumably this is because of a shift from existing inefficient water distribution infrastructure to more efficient infrastructure, this isn't certain or guaranteed, and in some cases the existing inefficient water distribution infrastructure may be supporting significant in-stream values, including for non-diadromous Galaxias. The proposed matters of discretion do not allow for consideration of such matters. Further, as applications under this rule will not be notified, including to the Director General, there is no ability for the Department to Papa Atawhai to potentially engage with applicants where known subpopulations of non-diadromous Galaxias could be impacted. If a restricted discretionary activity is included in the plan change, it is submitted that matters of discretion should allow for consideration of in-stream values, including protection of non-significant habitat of non-diadromous Galaxias. This would allow for appropriate conditions to be imposed to avoid further degradation of the environment in the interim. Lastly, Your Honour, the non-complying activity. The submission supported the idea of the non-complying activity policy and rule to allow for genuine exceptions when a term longer than 6 years and up to 2035 could be considered. The submission considered that the plan changes notified lack sufficient detail and sought to address this. In the latest 14 March version of Plan Change 7, the limitation that consents granted under this rule would expire by the end of 2035 has been removed. Instead, the revised wording would avoid granting replacement consents for a duration of more than 6 years. It is unclear to me what the effect of removing that previous explicit expiry date of 31 December 2035 means for the non-complying activity, and this is a change which will need to be considered further by Mr. Brass, the Director General's planning witness. And lastly, Your Honour, the Director General is calling two witnesses, Dr. Nicholas Dunn and Mr. Murray Brass. And in relation to Mr. Brass's written evidence, I do note that as this primarily relates to the notified version of the plan change, I alert the court to the likely need to provide supplementary evidence to address the most recently revised version of Plan Change 7, Annex 2. Mr. De Pelsenmaker's supplementary evidence.
Okay. All righty. Have you got any questions?
No, I think I'll ask them on the way through. Thank you.
This submission related to the notified plan change, not to the one we've just received overnight.
No.
So this could have quite a...
And this is somewhat of the difficulty, Your Honour. The Director General actually submitted in time for the Council notified version of Plan Change 7 back in 4 May 2020. And yes, it was re-notified by the Environmental Protection Authority. I don't think we chose to further submit it or to submit again at that point. We did do a further submission on some other parties' submission when that process opened, but we were all dealing with that original March 2020 notified version.
Okay.
Thank okay, it's okay. Understood.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honour.
All right, thank you. So we're in your hands with your first witness.
Yes, if I could now call Dr. Nicholas Dunn. Dr. Dunn, is your... Sorry, I'll let you get your evidence before you. Dr. Dunn, is your full name Nicholas Rex Dunn?
It is.
And are you a freshwater science advisor in the aquatic unit of the Biodiversity and Engagement Group of the Department of Conservation Te Papa Atawhai?
I am.
And do you have any corrections that you would like to make to this evidence?
No, there might be one or two commas or full stops missing, but nothing substantive.
All right. And you have...
changed.
You have set out at paragraphs 3 to 14 of your evidence, your qualifications and previous experience.
Yes, I have.
And do you now confirm and produce this evidence to the court?
Yes, I do.
And because your evidence came under the 20-page limit, you don't have an executive summary in your evidence, and I wasn't going to lead one, so I now leave you to the questions of the court.
No questions for me either. Understand the evidence. So we're going to throw that open to cross-examination, which is ORC.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good afternoon. Now, my first line of questioning relates to fish passage, and I'm a little unclear, just based on the legal submissions, whether fish passage was still being pursued as a matter of control with respect to the controlled activity rule. And my understanding is that that issue is going to be addressed at some point later this week. So I just wanted to explore with you some questions on the basis that fish passage remains as a matter of control in the controlled activity rule. So when you think about a matter of control dealing with fish passage, how would you go about assessing that matter of control? What type of ecological information would need to be furnished with respect to fish passage?
I'll just point out that I'm neither a planner nor a fish passage expert. So there are more qualified people within the department that could answer that question, but I couldn't.
So you have no expertise from an ecological perspective on what types of assessment might be necessary to assess a matter of control relating to fish passage?
No, I don't.
Very well. We'll move on to another topic if you have no expertise on that issue. Perhaps if I can take you to your evidence in chief and paragraph 60. And here you're providing some evidence in relation to the application of a minimum flow according to Schedule 2 capital A of the water plan in circumstances or situations where no minimum flow currently exists on a permit. Are you familiar with the catchments set out in Schedule 2A?
I have a rudimentary understanding, yes.
And in relation to your level of understanding, is there much crossover between those catchments and the catchments dominated by deemed permits?
I haven't undertaken that analysis specifically, no.
And have you undertaken any analysis in relation to whether there are, in fact, minimum flows on deemed permits being renewed? Do you have any understanding of the mixture of permits?
No, I don't.
Do you have any ecological understanding in relation to the impact that imposing those minimum flows would have on ecological values within the Schedule 2A catchments?
No, but my understanding is that they were set on the best information at hand at the time. That may have changed in the time period since they were proposed.
So you, in this brief of evidence, haven't analysed the effect of imposing those minimum flows on the Schedule 2A catchments from an ecological perspective?
No, I haven't. I've relied on the analysis undertaken at the time by the ecological experts who were involved.
And did you review those analyses in preparation for your writing of your evidence?
No, I haven't.
I want to take you now to paragraph 62 of your evidence, and in your first sentence there you respond to a paragraph from Mr. Wilson's evidence in relation to instantaneous rates of take, and you then go on to provide your opinion in relation to the potential for instantaneous rates of take to increase for some consents. When you were writing that paragraph, what is it that you had in mind in relation to the potential for increase of instantaneous rates of take? Compared to what?
The way I approached that paragraph was that you might be taking at a, over a volume of water over a specific time, and you could average that across that time, or you could take that entire volume at during a shorter period of time, depending on the restrictions of your infrastructure, of course. So there is a potential that if you took to the maximum of your infrastructure over a short period of time, you could essentially dewater a reach of stream. And so we want to avoid any further adverse effect.
What do you mean by we, what, in that context?
Well, New Zealand Inc. on the effect of an adverse effect on non-diatomous galaxis habitats.
New Zealand who?
Inc.
Inc.
Yes, New Zealand as a whole. They're our fish, so that's why I talk about we.
When you read Mr. Wilson's evidence and you've referred specifically to his paragraph 58, did you understand Mr. Wilson to be referring to instantaneous rates of take calculated under the water plan 95th percentile methodology or something else?
If you need to refer to his evidence, you should say so.
Do you have Mr. Wilson's evidence with you?
Yes, I do. I'll just find it. Mr. Leslie is referring to the 95th percentile, so I took it as the 95th percentile, yes.
You mean Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
No. So what Mr. Wilson was referring to in his paragraph was the difference between the proposed schedule method 10A and the 95th percentile method currently being used under the current water plan.
Oh, yes, I see the ban. Yes, sorry, my mistake.
So when you say in your paragraph 62, as indicated by Mr. Wilson, the instantaneous rate of take may increase for some consents, what Mr. Wilson's actually saying is that when using the proposed methodology in Plan Change 7 compared to the 95th percentile methodology used under the water plan, there may be a higher instantaneous rate of take.
Under Plan Change 7?
Yes.
So that could lead to an adverse effect?
That could lead to an adverse effect compared to the a permit being renewed under the operative water plan. And a limit, if it was imposed, equating to the 95th percentile.
If you don't understand the question, you should ask Council to rephrase.
Yes, yes, thank you. Could you please rephrase?
I'll put it this way. Plan Change 7 does not allow for an increase in the instantaneous rate of take above the current consented or permitted rate of take, does it?
Yes, I think so.
So you do think it does allow that?
No, I think you're correct in what you just said. Sorry, I've been up since 4:30.
It's all right. Make sure I don't ask any questions with double negatives. So I'm trying to understand what your concern in paragraph 62 is addressing, and I wanted to make sure you had correctly understood what Mr. Wilson was actually saying in his paragraph. because it appears to me in terms of how you have referenced his paragraph in your first sentence that there may have been a misunderstanding about what it was that Mr. Wilson was saying.
It would appear that that could be the case, yes. I guess the overall intent is that we don't want an instantaneous rate of take which causes a detrimental effect to the stream environment.
Perhaps I could put it to you this way. Provided the instantaneous rate of take does not increase above that which has been authorised and has been exercised historically, the concerns you raise in your paragraph 62 would be addressed.
Yes.
I want to move on now to the issues you've addressed in your paragraph 63, and you acknowledge that, well, do you have any working knowledge of hydrology within the Otago region?
No.
Do you have any knowledge in relation to the current priority system that attaches to deemed permits?
I have an understanding of what they are, but I don't know any specific examples that I could provide you of how they operate.
So you have no knowledge of whether they have been exercised, and if so, to what extent?
No. And again, it's trying to ensure that there's no change or alteration to the hydrological environment from current to which may cause an adverse effect.
And you pick up that theme midway through your paragraph 63, where you note that it may be advisable to retain the current priority system or some system that mimics the current priority system that operates on deemed permits. So is that what you're trying to pick up in,
yes,
in that part of the paragraph?
Yes.
Now, do you have a working knowledge or an understanding, even at a conceptual level, of the proposed method that's been put forward with respect to Plan Change 7?
The method for?
The method for calculating historic use. So method in Schedule 10, capital A4.
No, that's hydrology area, which is outside my area of expertise.
If that method was seeking to reflect the historic use of water, and that historic use of water, well, the methodology was picking up on the exercise of priorities as it's been happening, is that what you are picking up on when you say some other system that mimics the current priority system?
I'm not a planner, so I couldn't put forward an alternative planning instrument, no.
But from your perspective, the key point is reflecting the historic manner in which these water permits have been exercised and ensuring that that continues for the short-term period.
On the understanding that in the short-term period that there is, again, an understanding of the hydrology of those catchments.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Winchester?
No questions for this witness, Your Honour. Thank you.
Fishing Game? Not here. Mr. Page?
Me, Your Honour.
Sorry.
Dr. Dunn, just while I'm organising the microphone, can I ask you to get a copy of Dr. Ali Bone's rebuttal or reply evidence, please?
Can I ask you please to turn to page 8 of Mr. Ali Bone's reply brief? And specifically looking at paragraph 24. I'll give you a moment perhaps to read that paragraph and re-familiarise yourself with it.
Yes.
Would you consider the point that Mr. Alibone makes about there being a limited risk of extinction to the population of galaxids at Totara Creek to be one of general application to all galaxid populations within the Otago region?
No, I don't. It's one example. It's not a generalisation. Dr. Alibone has provided an example from a single stream, which I don't consider to be able to be generalised across Otago.
Thank you.
I understand, I suppose, your concern or you're wanting to ensure that the risks posed to galaxid species by Plan Change 7 are not exacerbated, that we essentially hold the line.
Yes.
In your view, I'll take you to paragraph 35 of your evidence, please.
Yes.
In that paragraph, you refer to using consent conditions and other management interventions to protect and reduce risk of species extinction.
Yes.
And you have been involved in consent renewal processes where those sorts of methods have been employed?
Yes.
Such as the Kyburn catchment as an example?
Not the Kyburn, no.
You were not involved in the Kyburn?
No, I wasn't.
Right. Perhaps Leahy's Creek would be an example with a galaxid management plan?
My involvement in Leahy's Creek was one site visit in February 2017. I wasn't involved in any other part of that process.
Right. No. When we are, or when applicants are looking to renew their permits, would you be interested in opportunities for resource consent conditions that would enable management interventions to support galaxid populations?
Yes, the intent of bettering the habitat of a species should be considered in the first instance, yes.
And if bettering the habitat of galaxid species also required resource consents of a term exceeding 6 years, would you support that?
I think looking at consent conditions, we would have to, I'm sort of thinking further to maybe an FMU style approach of understanding catchment objectives and what needs to be achieved in various parts of a catchment or sub-catchments within that to it. And so you don't want to be in a situation where consents are granted which may be inconsistent with a objective which is written under an NPS compliant plan.
Even if the granting of that consent was to protect the habitat of galaxids?
I can see where you're going. We'd need, if those consents are granted but then become inconsistent with objectives which are developed under an NPS compliant plan, that could pose a problem, in my understanding, from a planning perspective. So while I would support any consent which help to maintain or better the galaxis habitat, that needs to be viewed in that context, that they shouldn't, that we can't set things up which are inconsistent in a short term.
Okay.
So stepping back and understanding what we're trying to achieve before those consents have conditions put on them would be advisable.
Going back to the issue, or I think Mr. Moore's questions around fish passage, I understand you don't have expertise in fish passage per se. But I wonder if you can help me. When we're discussing fish passage, I understand that to be movement up and down the waterway.
Yes.
As distinct from fish screening, which requires infrastructure to prevent fish from moving into intakes. Is that my understanding correct?
On the whole, I would agree with that, yes.
And so the issue for the department is in ensuring that fish passage, whether that's provided or not provided by an individual take, that circumstances are kept as they are, that the renewals of the permits, whether for 6 years or some other number, or 6 years on the controlled activity rule, that circumstance remains the same.
Yes. And in that period, as we work towards the NPS compliant plan,
yes,
there would be an increase in knowledge of those habitats.
Yes.
Yes, and management interventions needed or not. Yes.
Okay. I have no further questions, Your Honour.
Thank you. Re-examination? No re-examination.
Did you have any questions?
No, I think that my question's been answered. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have no questions either. So you're released and able to travel to Marlborough, I think, and participate on a...
No, that's Mr. Brass.
Oh, that's... Yes. Oh, okay. Yes. All right. Well, anyway, you're released because I know you have somewhere else to be. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. That is us for today. With a half-day break tomorrow. Parties coming back to talk about... Nah, I said parties coming back at... Ms. Mel hopped only to come back at 9 o'clock to front the court, unless everyone else wants to be there, but perhaps by email as to the arrangements. Expert conferencing.
Yes, Your Honour, and I have been in touch with Mr Wilson and Mr Leslie this afternoon, and in terms of getting a response back from LAMPRO and ORUG, they may need a little more time than half an hour just to... there's some things that they may need to work through in terms of that scenario. So a window of an hour rather than half an hour from that response would be useful for them.
And so you're thinking if they hear back from ORUG and LAMPRO 8:30 tomorrow morning that they'll need a further hour to think about whatever it is that's being raised, and then we'll be able to communicate to the court whether there is an agreed scenario and data set.
That is my understanding. Right.
And if there isn't, then I think the process will be for Commissioner Mr Dunlop to do what Mr Dunlop does to see whether or not we can't get people on the same page, and he can report back to me. Also, you'll let me know whether the dates for the planning conference in April are suitable. So that's about, 9:30, 10?
Yes, I'll endeavour. Yeah, I have asked for a response from parties today.
Okay.
So.
All right, anything else we need to address? Okay, so going into tomorrow, who are we going to hear?
We move on to Mr. De Pelsmaker in terms of introducing the next iteration of changes to the plan change. And then I would suggest we'll hear from Ms. Gilroy, Ms. King, and then Mr. Wilson. Now, in terms of other witness or witness unavailability, Mr. Brass, I think, he has some issues. It may well be that we can hear from Mr. De Pelsmaker and then hear from Mr. Brass before calling the other witnesses, if that assists.
I don't know. I mean, Mr. Brass sounds like he's got to do some quiet reflection in relation to your evidence, and it sounds like there would be a change. Has been reflecting, and there would be a change anyway, regardless of where he stands in relation to.
So of course, Mr. Brass is an independent expert, and he can certainly come to his own view.
Mm.
My difficulty is that as counsel and advocate for the Director General, I have a certain position which the Director General put forward in the submission, which I am at this point still bound to advance.
Mm. Yep. Okay. So, I think what you're saying is that Mr. Brass may come to a different position, and
yes,
that's fine. And then the question then becomes, has that been raised in any submission? If it's not your submission, then any other submission?
Your Honour, I don't believe that Mr. Brass will be going outside what is within... the scope of the other submissions. There may be an issue in terms of whether it's within the scope of the matters on which the Director General further submitted. And I would need to look at the submissions that Mr. De Pelsmaker has referenced in his supplementary evidence to see to what extent the Director General as a position has scope to change.
Mm. So this is obviously the thing that the court doesn't ordinarily concern itself with.
Yes.
But in the ordinary case, you would be leading evidence that would be within the scope of your submission.
Yes.
But this is a court process. So is it open to you to say, well, things have moved on and my planner is going to pray in aid of, say, the Minister of Environment submission, who said X and support that now as an outcome. Is that available to the court, or do you sort of get hoisted by your original submission? I actually don't know, so...
I'll let Mr. Moore have a go first.
My preliminary view is that the scope does exist for that approach to be taken.
Yeah.
But in terms of the utility of cross-examining Mr. Brass in relation to a position which is potentially no longer being advanced by, for example, either the Minister or the Director General of Conservation or the Minister for the Environment.
Not much.
Not much. And I'm just thinking through from a timing perspective, if parties are to file the relief that they are now seeking on Wednesday morning of this week, it strikes me that hearing from Mr. Brass and any other planning witness after that time would be a more efficient use of time, because I simply won't be exploring matters that aren't being pursued by parties.
No, no. And I would think it would also be the case for Ms. McIntyre too. Maybe not be the case for the others.
Then, ma'am, and I will be meeting with Ms. McIntyre tomorrow, and it may be helpful if she can prepare an updated version of relief. Obviously, she reflected on some matters when she was questioned on Friday.
Do you have a view as to whether Ms. McIntyre has to find herself within the original scope of Ngāi Tahu's submission? I mean, I'm assuming that Mr. Palsmaker, he can go, well, look, I like a bit of the MFEs and I like a bit of docs and I like a bit, you know, if that's where he's going, and that would be fine because he can find the scope there. But what's the case in terms of an individual party?
My submission, ma'am, is that the witness, provided they appreciate the range of scope available, looking at all matters in the round, is entitled to make a recommendation along the same lines that Mr. the Pulsemaker would.
Right.
So I don't say that an independent expert is bound to only provide an opinion within the bounds of the relief advanced by the party that engaged them.
So they can quite sensibly go, well, actually,
And indeed, an example of that, ma'am, is the reflection that Ms. McIntyre gave to the court on Friday, that she'd inclined to the view, I think, of Mr. Farrell. In terms of did it better solve the problem that she was looking at?
Okay.
And she may reflect on that again, given what Mr. what Mr. Pulsemaker has now produced.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's really helpful.
And for the Director General, Your Honour, I think frankly where we are looking at is potentially a pulling back from the original submission. So I am not expecting that what Mr. Brass would say would be out of scope, because the Director General submitted on the entirety of the plan change except the schedule. So in my view, anything frankly within the parameters of the plan change excepting the schedule is within scope for the Director General to seek and amend his relief on, and for Mr. Brass as a planning witness to reach a view on.
So I guess the question will be, if the Director General, the question that I was putting to you is, if the Director General, accepting that, has made a submission on the whole PC7 but not the schedule, so the schedule's beyond the scope of the Director General's interests, but beyond that, can look for any relief?
Well, I don't think we would go so far as to say that we would adopt the proposed permitted activity suggested in the relief of
Oruc. I know
of
that
Oruc.
You perhaps wouldn't, but could you? I mean, that's really what I'm driving at. What?
So
you haven't made a submission.
Yes. So in my submission, or my thinking, Your Honour, because it's thinking, it's not necessarily a legal submission, so I want to be clear, is that the notified plan change dealt with an objective, some policies, a controlled activity rule, a non-complying activity rule, and the Director General submitted on those matters. So we now have an additional restricted discretionary activity which has been proposed. I don't understand there to be a great deal of change in terms of the objective and policies. It's just something else which has come in. I certainly consider that the Director General has scope, and Mr. Brass has scope to speak to and take a view on that new restricted discretionary activity which has been proposed by Council. In terms of the permitted activity, the only way which has come out of Oruc's submission, the only way in which, in my submission, the Director General will be able to take a view on that was if the Director General had further submitted one way or the other on Oruc's submission seeking that permitted activity, and I don't believe the Director General did.
So if, as a matter of theory, you thought that was a good idea, you don't think you could lead evidence because it would be beyond your...
It would be beyond the scope of the submission which the Director General made on the plan
change. And that is because you didn't make a further submission on the OROC matter. Yes, so there are some limitations.
Yes, Your Honour. So we're certainly limited to the matters within the Director General's original submission, the matters which Council puts before us, and the matters on which the Director General further submitted. And where there are matters of relief sought in other submissions but the Director General did not submit on, further submit on, those would be beyond the scope of matters which the Director General can comment on. Now, Mr Brass, as an independent planning witness, certainly can still comment on those, but that would be a position that he would be taking, not one for the Director General.
Okay. All right. Does anyone have a different view to that expressed by Council thus far? Because if you have, you should really let me know. Yeah. Seemed to me that perhaps, Mr Page, you were in the most advantageous position because you said reject, so anything less than reject...
Say anything.
You can say anything, really.
We probably will.
That's what I'm worried about.
No, I don't think so. No, I,
but that'd be true, though, because you're out there at reject, so anything less than reject.
Yeah. The situation I see is it's not something the court needs to worry about too much because you're not constrained other than by the entire envelope that all of the parties have presented. Whether it's open to any of my friends to advance a case that's inconsistent to their client's submission is a different matter. And if somebody wishes to raise an objection about that, well, that's the way it's dealt with. But I don't think you need to be concerned about it at the moment because your jurisdiction is the outside boundary of all of the submissions.
Yeah. I guess what would be, well, it's not that I guess, what would be helpful to the court, I think, when, you know, planners are coming back, having considered... you know, or the evidence to date, if they are proposing an amended relief, that they do signal what is the scope for that, where is that to be found, either in the own submission or some other submission that they had an interest in, and always be mindful of Section 32 as well, so we're not just populated by good ideas, but we're landing it in the context of Section 32 and analysis, as you know, to the extent as is required.
Yes. I mean, my concern about Wednesday morning is more along the lines of an unexpected tactical faux pas that leaves the court constrained in its jurisdiction in a way that it isn't currently by limiting the relief that a party seeks. The law of unintended consequences is rife in first instance hearings, I'm sorry to say. They're slightly messy beasts, messier than the court's used to dealing with, I suspect.
No. Because the court has the product of those unintended consequences in the appeals before it, so so we're alert to that. Now, I think it's I guess the message which has been drilled in or instilled in us is to make sure there is that there is scope on the submission. That's critical. It has to be that way because if there's not, but it's a good idea, 293 applies. So obviously scope is very much in focus, and of course it has to be that way as a matter of fairness to folk out there in the community. Alrighty, so we're adjourned through to what time? 2 o'clock. 1 o'clock. How long do you need for your morning meetings?
I'm not sure, Your Honour, that we had actually quite settled the question of when Mr Brass would give evidence and whether it should,
of course.
It
no,
should be
I think,
tomorrow or,
I think we
or
should
perhaps
leave.
Delayed.
We'll delay yes. him. I'd far rather see where he gets to after a period of quiet reflection on the hearing today.
Yes, Your Honour.
And the same with
and at this point, Your Honour, I can and probably do a council's memorandum by Wednesday morning. I think it would be potentially a stretch too far to expect supplementary evidence
absolutely.
By that time.
And so then, anyway, so we know what we're doing tomorrow, so that's good. And then Wednesday, Wednesday, and here I think, we've got Ms McIntyre back down for Narunga, but I think you're probably in the same position. It's a bit too early. Or perhaps Wednesday we just go with Fish and Game's opening submission and ecological flow evidence. Which are the witnesses, Hayes and Trotter? If they're available. Anybody? Nobody? Okay.
Yes, my suggestion, Your Honour, is that Mr Brass would be available on Friday and that should
work.
And we also still have Mr. Ensor for the Minister, Your Honour, and I imagine that Ms. Dixon would like to get him before the court.
Yeah, well, we've got so the planning witnesses to come, Mr. Brass, Mr. Ensor, Ms. McIntyre, and potentially Mr. Farrell. I'm not sure whether anything that has been said to date impacts on his opinion as well. Can you confer and advise when it is that an updated brief, supplementary briefs of evidence are likely to be available in response to the evidence led by, or to be led tomorrow by the Regional Council and in response to any matters which have been addressed in the hearing thus far? But if convenient, it would be great to hear it on Friday if the witnesses are available.
It would be helpful if we update the court when we come back tomorrow, at the beginning of the afternoon, as to where the witnesses have got to.
No, that would be good.
And whether we're looking at memorandum of counsel or how quickly they can put together a planning brief or whatever.
All right, tomorrow. So tomorrow, and we're starting tomorrow, is what time? 2 o'clock? 1 o'clock?
1:30 and split the difference.
1:30? Okay.
It says 12:45, ma'am.
12:45?
It says lunch at 12:45.
Well, yeah, it doesn't say what time we start. It just says lunch at 12:45.
It does too. How odd. But there you go. It doesn't matter what time we start, really. How about we just make it a 1:30 start tomorrow? Yep, that's convenient, and we'll run through your witnesses. Council can update me at 1:30 as to what the state of play is, all of you. Yep. And we, who do we need to get this? We need to get written directions out also so that Ms. Baker Galloway knows what's going on.
Here. Yes, I'm not sure whether anyone was reporting back to her. Somebody's at the back, so message will get
all
back.
Right. Well, we'll send something by email tonight as well.
Great.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we'll see. That's what I mean. We'll need to send something to all parties advising us the council's case to be called tomorrow, supplementary evidence, with all parties to confer a report on the time that they might require to file supplementary evidence. So, I mean, I'm imagining LandPro will be responding, etc. Yeah. This is my hope. All right. Very good. I think we're adjourned.
All right.